You all should have a presentation that was attached to the email that was sent out with the training notice that you'll need to open up and follow along. We're very pleased to have Judge Robert Scola here from Miami, Florida, to give us a presentation on contempt issues. He trains the judges, so we're very lucky to have such a qualified speaker. And this is an issue, as you all know, that many attorneys frequently make mistakes in this area. So Judge Scola has been on the bench since 1995 in the 11th Circuit. Prior to that, he was in private practice and then also served as a state attorney and major crimes prosecutor for several years. He has, of course, won a number of awards and has been honored repeatedly for his professional activities. With that, I would like to hand it over to Judge Scola. And Judge, I'm not sure, do you prefer that they hold questions to the end? Or
Well, if they're on mute, I guess if they're on mute to ask a question, they're going to hear all the beeping and everything. It's probably...
It typically runs smoother if we wait and ask all the questions at the end.
We can do that.
Okay, with that, I'm going to hand it over to the judge.
All right, thank you very much. And I hope all of you have a copy of my PowerPoint presentation. So if you want to follow along, hopefully you're sitting at your computers and you can do that. Normally when I teach this class, I try and make it an interactive class, asking questions, and then the answers would be later presented on the PowerPoint. I guess that's pretty hard to do in this telephonic presentation. So we'll go forward and do the best we can. I have been teaching contempt to judges now for about 8 years. So I gather every single appellate opinion on dealing with contempt, and consistently judges are reversed 85% of the time on contempt issues, which is an incredible, you know, in most cases, probably in all other cases combined, we probably have an affirmance rate of way well over 90%. So we are failing miserably as judges in handling contempt matters. Part of it is, as we go through this, you'll see that, you know, a lot of times when you get to the point that you want to use your contempt powers as a judge, it's because you were completely frustrated, annoyed, aggravated. And I'm sure, as you know, in your professional and daily lives, when you are annoyed and frustrated and aggravated, it's very difficult to think clearly and make good decisions. Part of it is when you get to things like indirect civil contempt and indirect criminal contempt, they are a lot more complicated than most lawyers and judges realize, and there's a lot of T's that have to be crossed and I's that have to be dotted. So we're going to go through here. For those of you who have the presentation and have it up on a on your computer, I'm just going to go to the second slide, which is the learning objectives for the course, and we're going to try and identify the different types of contempt. If you are appearing in front of a judge, and going to help you advise the judge how to conduct those hearings, to help prepare a written order for the judge and to know what the appropriate sanctions are. The next slide is talking about what is contempt. The definition of contempt is a refusal to obey a legal order, mandate, or decree by a judge, or an act tending to embarrass, hinder, or obstruct the court. So, getting to the next slide, we're going to talk about the four different kinds of contempt, because every contempt is either direct or indirect, and it's either criminal or civil. The next slide talks about the difference between direct and indirect contempt. Direct contempt occurs in the presence of the court, within the eyes and ears. It has to be something the judge himself or herself personally witnessed or heard. Indirect contempt occurs outside the presence of the judge. And particularly in family law, there's a big misunderstanding among a lot of the lawyers, particularly, about the difference between criminal and civil contempt. Criminal contempt is designed to punish or vindicate the authority of the court, and we're on the next slide now, whereas civil contempt is designed to compel compliance with a court order. So if somebody has not been paying child support and you want them to pay child support, then you want to go forward with a civil contempt action because you want them to pay. If somebody has not been paying child support and they've been dodging court orders and doing everything they can, and you don't care, you've gotten to the point where you don't care, you just want to punish them, and it doesn't matter whether they pay the money or not, then they're going to go forward with a criminal contempt action. All right, the next slide, we're going to, and again, there can be criminal contempt in a civil case or civil contempt in a criminal case. What defines the type of contempt is the act of the person and the remedy you're seeking, not whether the underlying case is a criminal case or a civil case. So in those four different kinds of contempt, the first one, we're on the next slide, is direct civil contempt. Direct civil contempt, since it's direct, it occurs in the presence of the court. And although there is no specific statute or rule or case law which specifically authorizes, there is a case that mentions it as a possible procedure that can be utilized by the court. And when you think about it, it makes sense if somebody is standing in court and is holding on to an engagement ring, and the judge says, give the engagement ring to the other party. They have the ability right there in front of the judge to give it to them. And if they don't do it, you can say, look, I'm going to sentence you to 30 days in jail unless you give the ring. So you're giving a direct order in the courtroom that they can comply with in the courtroom. So you should have also received by email, in addition to the PowerPoint presentation, a document, a Word document, which has a bunch of different scenarios that we're going to talk about. So the first scenario, number one, in direct civil contempt, in a marital settlement agreement, the husband, who is a police officer, agrees to pay the wife 25% of his police pension and agrees to make her as the beneficiary of the pension. After the divorce, he remarries and lists his new wife as the beneficiary. So the former wife has a form that she has received from the pension, which will allow the husband, former husband, to rename her as the beneficiary of the plan. So she hands the form to him, and you order, as the judge orders him to sign the form. So the first question is, can you sentence this police officer to jail unless he signs the form? And the answer is yes. Okay? In fact, you can actually sentence him to an indefinite period of incarceration because all he has to do is sign the form. And again, on civil contempt, okay, this is one of the areas where judges get reversed most of the time and the lawyers don't really understand this. Because we don't put people in jail, okay, for non-criminal acts unless they have the ability to on their own to get out, the judge's order of incarceration must contain a purge provision. As soon as you sign the form, you can get out. So the person has the ability on their own to get out of jail. So that's why it is civil contempt. So now let's go to scenario number two. Okay, that same police officer is now in jail. He's still refusing to sign the form, and he's about to resign from the police department. Once he resigns from the police department under the rules of their pension plan, he cannot change the beneficiary. So he resigns, and the lawyer files a motion demanding his immediate release from custody. And the question is, must the judge order his immediate release? And the answer is, unfortunately, yes. Remember that civil contempt is to coerce somebody to comply with the order. He can no longer comply with the order because now that he retired, the form can't be changed. So, therefore, he can't be punished, or he doesn't hold the key to his own jail cell. However, it doesn't mean he gets away with it. He can be held in contempt, but it becomes a criminal contempt. And we're going to talk about that later on, and you'll see how many obstacles there are to proving a criminal contempt. But it is a situation that can be remedied with jail time, but not through civil contempt once he doesn't have the ability to do that. So one of the things we see all the time in court is direct criminal contempt. Okay? And this occurs in the presence of the court, under the eye of the court, and it's a summary proceeding. Okay? And because it's a summary proceeding, it's reserved for exceptional circumstances. I mean, every time somebody annoys a judge, the judge just shouldn't be able to just throw them in jail. It has to be something that threatens the judge, disrupts a proceeding, or obstructs a court proceeding. And the court must give the contemned an opportunity to explain his conduct or her conduct before adjudicating, and then a second time must give them an opportunity to present mitigating circumstances before sentencing. And because it is a criminal contempt, it must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. But think about it. The judge himself is seeing it. I would think if they saw it, they would be pretty convinced beyond a reasonable doubt about what happened. So let's talk about some of the scenarios. We're going to skip to scenario number 4, okay? During a criminal trial, the judge grants a state motion in limine prohibiting defense counsel from cross-examining the state's cooperating witness about his plea bargain. The defense counsel is convinced that the judge's ruling is completely incorrect and therefore asks the witness about his plea bargain. When the judge tries to hold the attorney in contempt, the lawyer gives the judge 3 cases directly on point from appellate courts which stand for the proposition that he is allowed to ask a cooperating witness about a plea bargain. Therefore, he says he can't be held in contempt of court for violating an order since that order was clearly erroneous. So the question is, can somebody be held in contempt for violating an order that is clearly erroneous? And the answer is yes. This is why we have appellate courts. If everybody who thought the judge was wrong could just do whatever they wanted to do, we would have mayhem at the trial court level. So even a legally incorrect order must be followed at that time. The remedy is to appeal if you lose the case. Okay, let's move to scenario number 5. A pro se litigant in a mortgage foreclosure calls the judge a son of a bitch in open court. When the judge begins to colloquy the litigant to hold him in contempt, the litigant demands that an attorney be appointed, since this would result in a criminal conviction and possible jail sentence. So the question is the contemner entitled to an attorney, since it's a criminal case for which he'd go to jail? And the answer is no. Okay, this is a summary procedure. Rule 3.830 allows judges to immediately take action to make sure that there's somebody that keeps coughing whose phone is not on mute. If a person would hit the star mute button or the pound mute button, I think that would hopefully help everybody. Thank you. So because it's a summary procedure that happens right in front of the court, there is no right to have all of the safeguards you normally have for a criminal case. So you are not entitled to an attorney for direct criminal contempt. But this is also one of the reasons why the appellate courts scrutinize so closely these contempt proceedings, because it gives so much power to the judges, and they want to make sure that the judges are not abusing that power. Okay, let's move to scenario number 6. After properly conducting a hearing on contempt and finding the person in contempt, the judge sentences the person to 6 months in jail, a fine of $750, attorney's fees to the opposing party, an order restricting the attorney from appearing in court in the future without co-counsel, and requiring the attorney to write 1,000 times, "I will not disobey an order of a judge." So are each of those sanctions an appropriate sanction for direct criminal contempt? A jail sentence of 6 months is an appropriate sentence. The statute allows a sentence for contempt not to exceed 1 year. And there's no jury trial if the sentence is 6 months or less. So for direct contempt, 6 months is the most you can do because you wouldn't have a jury trial. So the 6-month sentence is a valid sentence. A fine of $750 is excessive. Under the statute, only a $500 fine may be imposed. Attorney's fees. You cannot award attorney's fees for wasting the court's time for a criminal contempt. Now, later when we talk about indirect civil contempt, that is a sanction that the judge can impose for indirect civil contempt, but not for the criminal contempt. All right, what about restricting the lawyer from appearing without co-counsel? The judge cannot do that. Okay, you're basically disbarring the person, okay, and you don't have the authority as a judge to do that. And what about writing 1,000 times on the board? And these, all of these sanctions came from real cases. This is not something I made up. A judge made an attorney actually do this, to write 1,000 times. And they held that that was an improper sanction because if it was contrived to instill contriteness, it was unnecessary. If it was contrived for any other purpose, it's an abuse of discretion. I mean, it's basically something you would punish a second grader with. So it's demeaning to the courts, and that's why they overturned that. So let's go to scenario number 7. Okay, and this is the second way that judges get in trouble and get reversed. Scenario number 7, after properly holding the contemner in contempt and properly sentencing the contemner, the judge prepares an order which cited the contemner's unjudicious, unethical, and intemperate conduct before the court. And the question is this a legally sufficient order? And the answer is no. Okay, remember, a lot of times, particularly in family court, there may not even be a court reporter there to have a record of what actually happened in front of the judge. So since the judge is really the judge, jury, and sentencer, they want to make sure that exactly what conduct the defendant committed is set forth in the judgment. So writing, as the judge did in this case, you know, that he's engaged in injudicious, unethical, and intemperate conduct, are really conclusions, okay? They are not facts. So the judge has to put in the order enough facts to justify the contempt, and therefore the order was legally insufficient. So on the next slide, we talk about a properly written order for direct criminal contempt. It has to be specific facts in the order, that the defendant was afforded the opportunity to present mitigating circumstances, there was an adjudication of guilt, the sentence imposed, and now this is a criminal conviction. So you have to advise the defendant of his right to appeal, and they do have a right to an appointed counsel for the appeal because it's not a summary appeal. So therefore, if they qualify for the public defender, even though they did not have the right to have a lawyer for the trial on the direct contempt, they do have a right to an appointed lawyer for the appeal. So let's move to scenario 8. In scenario 8, at a motion to suppress hearing, the detective testifies that the defendant consented to a search of her apartment. The defendant testified that she did not consent. The judge denied the motion to suppress and held the defendant in contempt for committing perjury. The question is, can a witness be in direct criminal contempt for committing perjury in court? And what the cases have held is that the mere fact that the court believes one witness over another is insufficient to establish contempt. I mean, think how many trials you have where the wife says X and the husband says not X. If we could put everybody in jail, you know, every single child in Florida would be being raised by DCF. You know, we can't just throw people in jail every time we believe one or don't believe one person over another. You know, however, if the witness, for instance, gave a statement that was diametrically opposed to his own previous statement, so it's just clear, without comparing one witness versus another witness, that the person committed perjury, then it is okay. But it's very, very rare that the judge should do that, because otherwise, if people know, wait a minute, if I go to testify in court and the judge believes somebody instead of me, I could go to jail. It's going to prevent people from, you know, coming to court and testifying. So let's move to scenario number 9. A party who is unhappy at the events that just took place in the courtroom screams profanities at his attorney in the hallway outside the courtroom, which caused the court to stop the proceedings then going on. So can the court hold the party in contempt for disrupting the proceedings? And the answer is maybe. There has to be evidence that the words were directed at the court or were intended to interrupt or hinder the judicial proceedings. Since the person was outside of in the hallway, you would have to have proof that it was his intent to interfere with the court. The fact that it interfered is not enough. It has to be calculated to lessen the court's dignity. And there's another case where the defendant kicked the door and told the bailiff to go F himself on the way out, even though that was kind of on the way out. The judge heard it, and it was clear by telling the judge's bailiff to go F yourself, you know, while he was still semi in the courtroom, that he was intending to lessen the court's authority and dignity, and contempt was appropriate in that circumstance. Right, scenario number 10. The defendant is out on bond and comes to court and tells the judge that he admits that he has marijuana in his system. The judge held him in contempt because, quote, if somebody comes into my courtroom with marijuana in his system, he's in contempt of court. So is this contempt for showing up? And the answer is no. There has to be evidence that the person was under the influence in court or had violated a court order. I mean, marijuana can stay in your system sometimes for up for 6 weeks. So if the person got out on bond 2 weeks ago, the fact that he has marijuana in his system. Now, if the person had admitted, I smoked marijuana while I was out on bond, you know, then that would be a violation of the court order releasing him on bond. Or if the person was, as in another case, you know, somebody passed out in court because he did a little coke that morning, you know, that contempt conviction was upheld because that having the defendant pass out obstructs the ability of the court to go forward with the proceedings and obstruct the administration of justice, and therefore contempt is appropriate. Now, here's why an example of why judges need to be reined in sometimes. And this is a real case, too, which is kind of scary. There's a big case in front of a judge. The judge is trying to get this case to go. There's six or seven different defense attorneys. So on day one, a prosecutor comes in and tells the judge, you know, they're not ready for, the state's not ready for trial, and he's not really the prosecutor on the case, but, you know, there's going to be all sorts of problems. So the judge resets the case, and the next time the court, a second different assistant state attorney comes in and says, yeah, now we're ready to try the case, but there's some other issue. So the judge then resets it for another status conference, and now a third different state attorney comes in who tells us, no, we're not really ready for trial. And the judge is frustrated with the state attorney's office because now three people are telling him three different things. Nobody knows what's going on. So he enters an order holding the entire state attorney's office in contempt. So can you do that? And the answer is, thankfully, no. Okay, first of all, think about it. Any actions by everybody in the state attorney's office except for the three people that were in court would have occurred outside the presence of the court. Okay, so it can't be direct contempt. Okay, and the fact that somebody was in court on day one saying, we're ready, how do you prove they really weren't ready on that day? So it's just a bothersome issue for the judge, but it's not the type of thing that we should be using our contempt powers for. Area number 12. A trial concludes, and as the jury's not guilty verdict is announced, the attorney for the defendant pounds his fist on the table and screams, yes, 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 and was immediately held in contempt by the judge. Is this correct? Can somebody be held in contempt for this outburst? And the answer is no. There's obviously an emotional display by the attorney. So unless given specific instructions not to display a reaction to the verdict, you can't hold somebody in contempt. So obviously most judges now and hopefully tell people when the verdict's about to come in, look, I don't know what the verdict's going to be. You don't know what it's going to be. And I'm just telling you right now, I'm not going to put up with any outbursts. So if you don't think you can control your emotions, leave now and we will tell you what the verdict is. But if you're here and you have an outburst, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And now at least you've given a clear directive to everybody. So now let's move to indirect civil contempt. This is probably the most utilized contempt. It's probably the one type of contempt that should be used by judges on a regular basis, particularly where people are not paying alimony or child support. And because it's so a lot more complicated than people think, people need to know more about it. I mean, when I teach lawyers who practice family law, this is what I spend most of my time talking about. And when we get to the end of this section, you'll see why so many people mess up these types of procedures. So let's talk about just basically what is indirect civil contempt. Well, it's indirect. That means it occurs outside the presence of the court. Because it's civil contempt, it is meant to coerce compliance with a court order or compensate the other party. There has to be a willful refusal to comply in spite of a present ability to comply, and most importantly, that the contemner holds the keys to his or her jail cell. And because it is a civil and not a criminal contempt, the contemner is not entitled to the same due process rights as in indirect criminal contempt. So let's go to a very common situation that we see in family court, which is scenario 13. After an evidentiary hearing, a mother who was ordered to pay child support was found to be in contempt of court for failing to pay $3,000 in child support. She had not paid $300 per month for 10 months. At the hearing, the mother offered no proof that she did not have the ability to pay. The judge ordered her to be incarcerated until she paid the $3,000. So the question is, can the mother be incarcerated until payment is made? So let's talk about this. When there's a motion for contempt for failure to pay, the initial burden is on the movement, the person asking to hold the other person in contempt, to show that there's a prior court order and a failure to pay. So in this case, there's a court order to pay $300 a month. They put on proof she didn't pay for 10 months. And therefore, when you have those two things, there is a presumption based upon the court order of an ability to pay. Okay? And remember, in this case, so the burden then shifts to the respondent to show an inability to pay. And in this case, the mother did not put on any evidence that she did not have the ability to pay. So there's a presumption that she had the ability to pay, and she did not rebut the presumption. So you can hold her in contempt. However, if the court finds that there was a willful violation, there must be a separate affirmative finding of the present ability to pay the purge amount. And the court must specifically identify the source of the funds available to pay the purge amount. And this is where judges get reversed most often for holding somebody in indirect contempt. And this is what frustrates lawyers. So some lawyer has been taking discovery, finally gets a hearing in front of the judge, and proves that this person has not paid child support for 10 months. You hold them in contempt. You properly find that they owe $3,000, but you have to find that their present ability to pay the purge amount. Most lawyers do not give the judge, present ability means today. If you had a hearing today at 1:30, then you would have to prove on February 10th at 1:30 how much money does this person have right now to pay a purge amount. If the person has $1.50, okay, the purge amount is $1.50. And the lawyers look at you stunned when you say that. So what do you mean? I just proved that they owe $3,000. What's the point of doing all this if I'm only getting $1.50? I said, well, the point is that it's hard to put somebody in jail just for owing money. So if you really want somebody to go to jail for not paying child support as a lawyer, you need to subpoena their bank records to have somebody come from the bank on that day with the bank statements, you know, showing the balance in the bank on that day. And that way, at least, if they have money there, they're just like, look, you have $1,500 in your checking account at Bank of America, so I'm sending you to 180 days with a purge amount that you pay $1,500 from your Bank of America account. So now you have set a specific amount. You've identified where it is. And I'm telling you, most lawyers don't give the judges the tools, that information. They just think they prove what they didn't pay. You know, less than 1% of the lawyers have evidence of what the person has at that time of the hearing. So that brings us to scenario 14. So at the same hearing, the mother testified that she did have $3,000 in her bank account. So the judge orders her to bring the money to court the next day to pay off the child support. The next day, the mother comes in and admits she took the money out of her account but lost it by gambling at a local casino. She even has a video from the casino to prove this. Now the question is, can she be held in indirect civil contempt and jailed until she makes the payment? Well, unfortunately, again, if the contemner willfully divest themselves of the ability to comply through their own fault, even if it's with the intent and purpose of violating the court order, this is not civil contempt. Because now you're here the next day on February 11th, when she comes back, she does not have $3,000 to pay a purge amount. You can't put somebody in jail for civil contempt for unless they have the ability to pay. Again, this doesn't mean she gets away with it, but this would constitute indirect criminal contempt. You just want to punish her. You say, okay, I want to punish you for violating the judge's order and spending the money at the casino instead of coming to court, and you just give her jail time. But as we will see later on, wanting to hold somebody in indirect criminal contempt and actually doing it, there's a big gap between those two. It's a very difficult thing to prove. Okay, let's go to scenario number 15. In scenario number 15, the father was properly notified to appear at a contempt hearing. The mother introduced bank records showing that on the day of the hearing, the father had $1,000 in his bank account, which was enough to pay the arrears of $700. So the court went forward with the hearing and held him in contempt, sentenced him to 60 days in jail with a purge amount of $700. The court then issued a writ of bodily attachment. So can the court go forward with a contempt hearing and sentence the person to a jail sentence without the defendant being present? And the answer is, fortunately, yes, you can. Okay, as long as he has been properly notified, okay, then you can go forward with the hearing. So let's go to scenario 16. That same father, okay, is arrested 30 days later. He says, hey, wait a minute, now that I'm in jail, I demand, even though I knew about that other hearing and I intentionally chose not to go, I demand a hearing now to prove that the purge amount that you set 30 days earlier is still valid. So is the father entitled to an additional hearing 30 days later, even if he admits he intentionally missed the first hearing? Unfortunately, yes. Okay, why? Because we can't keep people in jail, okay, unless they have the ability, unless they hold the keys to the jail cell. So 30 days ago, he had $1,000 in his bank account. We don't know if he has $1,000 in his bank account today. So a civil contemner is entitled to a hearing to demonstrate his inability to comply with the purge provisions, even after contempt, particularly where a substantial period of time has gone by between the date of the hearing and the time of his arrest. Okay, scenario number 17. In a civil case, a litigant has not produced documents in spite of several orders to compel. The court finds a willful violation by a preponderance of the evidence and sentences him to jail with an appropriate purge provision of production of the documents. The contemner objects, claiming that where a jail sentence is imposed, contempt must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Is this correct? The answer is no. This is a civil contempt. So therefore, even though somebody could go to jail, the burden of proof is still a preponderance of the evidence, not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Let's go to scenario 18. Instead of sentencing the contemner in scenario 17, the person who didn't produce the documents, to jail, the judge holds her in indirect civil contempt and fines her $100 for each day that the documents were not turned over in the past and $100 for each day the documents are not turned over, starting on the day of the hearing. Is this a legal sanction? And the answer is no. If a fine is retroactive, remember, the judge is fining this person $100 a day for things that happened in the past. If they produce those documents today, they're still going to get that fine. They're still being punished for something. Therefore, that is a criminal sanction, and you can't do that without criminal contempt. Okay. However, the future fines are valid because you're allowed to impose a fine to coerce somebody to comply with your order. And if they can produce the records today, they don't pay a penny. And so the $100 a day fine is valid because you're compelling them to comply and because they have the ability to comply. On scenario 19, we're still on that civil case. The contaminant fails to turn over discovery documents, and the court imposes an indefinite period of incarceration. Doesn't sentence him to 30 days or 60 days or 6 months. Just say, I am sentencing you to an indefinite period of incarceration, okay, until you turn over the documents. Can the judge sentence somebody to jail for an indeterminate sentence for indirect civil contempt? And the answer is yes. The sentence of incarceration for indirect civil contempt may be for a fixed sentence, like 60 days, or indefinite. Now, if it's indefinite, then you can't keep somebody in jail for 30 years waiting for them to turn over documents. At some point, you have to say, wait a minute, this is obviously not going to coerce them. It's not working, so I am going to have to release them. But again, how long you keep them there is going to be balanced against how serious a violation it is. There's a case, I think, from up in the Northeast where a mother has hidden her children from the father, and she's been in jail for years because she won't tell them where the courts where the kids are. So because of the nature of the seriousness of missing kids, then that was upheld as an appropriate sanction. Somebody who doesn't turn over a financial affidavit in a case, maybe 6 months in jail, they may find it's too long. All right, let's go to scenario number 20. In a divorce final judgment, the husband was ordered to pay the wife's MasterCard bill of $10,000 within 30 days. The wife files a motion for contempt claiming that he hasn't done that, and she produces records showing that he has $150,000 in a bank account right then, and the judge tells the court that he's just refusing to pay the MasterCard bill. So may a party be held in contempt for failing to comply with a final judgment of which ordered him to pay the MasterCard bill? And the answer is no. Debts not involving support. Okay, in other words, debts that are not alimony or child support cannot be enforced by the contempt power of the court. If it relates to the equitable distribution scheme, contempt is not available. This is why when you're asking a judge to make a distribution of assets and the husband or wife, whoever it is, has shown a history of not complying with court orders about payment, you might want to try and get the judge to structure this as a lump sum alimony payment rather than as an equitable distribution. And that way you can use the court's contempt powers. But I can't tell you how many motions for contempt are filed where the only thing they're asking you to do is to hold somebody in contempt for not complying with the equitable distribution scheme, which we're not allowed to use our contempt powers for that. All right, scenario 21. At the time of a hearing on a rule to show cause, the court advises the contemner that she has a right to an attorney. The contemner demands that an attorney be appointed for her. Is she entitled to an appointed attorney for indirect civil contempt if jail is a possible sentence? And the answer is no. Although a respondent in an indirect civil contempt has a right to obtain counsel, they do not have a right to appointed counsel if they are indigent. So they have the opportunity to get their own lawyer, but they don't have the right to have the rest of us pay for their lawyer. Scenario number 22. In a divorce case, the court found that the husband was in indirect civil contempt for failing to deliver a vehicle to the wife as had been ordered. As part of the sanctions, she ordered the husband to pay the wife $400 to compensate the wife for the expenses of renting a car during the time he had failed to deliver the car to her. Is this a proper sanction for indirect civil contempt? And remember when we talked about earlier, what you can do with indirect civil contempt. Indirect civil contempt can be used either to compensate an injured party for losses or to coerce the offending party to comply with a previous court order. Most of the time, you're using it to coerce the person to comply. But because you can also use it to compensate the person for losses, then you could require the person to pay for the expenses of having to get the car because of their failure to comply with a court's order. Scenario 23, and this is something, unfortunately, that we see all too often. During the pendency of a petition to modify child custody, the mother continually violated court discovery orders and failed to appear at her deposition and at court-ordered mediation. So pretty much everything she's supposed to do, she's not doing. The judge properly holds her in indirect civil contempt, and as a sanction, the judge gave temporary custody of the children to the father. Is this a proper sanction? And the answer is no. Okay? Contempt should not be used as a basis for change of custody. As all of you know, all decisions relating to really what we call time-sharing of children must be made in the best interest of the children. So the fact that the mother didn't comply with discovery is totally irrelevant to what's in the best interest of the children. I shouldn't say it's totally irrelevant. Obviously, if there are other things that the mother is doing that a judge has ordered her to do that are impacting negatively the children, the fact that she's also not complying with these other orders is just evidence of her inability or unwillingness to comply with orders. And that might be a very small part of the reason why the judge might do something relating to the children, but that can't be the basis for changing custody because of somebody's failure to comply with discovery. So I want to spend about 10 minutes on indirect criminal contempt, and then hopefully we'll use the rest of our time for questioning. So let's talk about, we've got to finish up with indirect civil contempt, the orders, okay? Again, if you're going to help prepare the order for the judges, okay, you have to find the person has been adjudicated of indirect civil contempt. Put in there what is the date of the original order that the person violated. That's to be an affirmative finding of a willful violation. You have to set forth the specific facts of the violation. There has to be a finding of the present ability to comply. And again, a separate finding of the present ability to comply with the purge provisions. And you have to specify the sentence, set a precise purge provision, and identify the source of a purge satisfaction. So all of that needs to be in the order of indirect civil contempt. So I save indirect criminal contempt for last because it really is something that is used sparingly and very unsuccessfully. So let's talk about it. This is a criminal charge, and like any criminal charge except for direct criminal contempt, and that's a big exception because that action is happening right in front of the judge. So indirect criminal contempt is happening outside. So like any other crime that happens in the world, the full panoply of due process rights apply. Okay, these include the right to an attorney, the right to a jury trial. And again, this is designed to punish the contemner for conduct occurring outside the presence of the court. And because it's a criminal case, proof beyond a reasonable doubt is needed. So let's go through some of the scenarios here for indirect criminal contempt. May a judge order the arrest of the defendant to ensure her appearance at the contempt hearing? This is scenario 24. The answer is yes, if the judge has good reason to believe that she will not attend the hearing, then you could issue a warrant for the arrest or issue a writ of bodily attachment. However, upon arrest, the contender is entitled to a bond hearing and release upon the same conditions that apply to other criminal charges. So you can't just hold somebody without bond waiting for the trial. Scenario 25, where the judge initiated the contempt proceedings, must she recuse herself from the case? And the answer is, the judge must disqualify him or herself only if the contempt involves personal disrespect or criticism of the judge. Now, most of the time, when somebody is criticizing the judge, it's usually to his or her face in court, and the judge is going to use the direct contempt powers. But what if somebody gave a television interview where they talked about what a moron Judge Scola is and how it's amazing that he must have got his license from a matchbook or whatever they want to say, and the judge feels that that is contumacious conduct, and because it's attacking the judge personally, even though the judge could initiate the rule to show cause, that would have to go to another judge to handle the trial. All right, scenario number 26. Must the allegations, and in order to show cause, be sworn to if the essential factual allegations are contained therein? And again, this the answer is yes. And this is where lawyers really mess up, okay? Because if you don't know as a lawyer what you want to do at the end of the contempt proceeding, it messes you up at the beginning. Okay, so if you want somebody just to go to jail at the end and to be punished, and you don't care if they comply with an order, then you're dealing with indirect criminal contempt. If you file a motion for contempt and it's not sworn to, and you go forward with everything in the case, you're wasting everybody's time because it's like an information or an indictment, okay? And it has to be sworn to. It has to be based upon legally sufficient facts. So that's why, whenever you see somebody file a motion for contempt, that doesn't exist, okay? Every motion is to say, motion for indirect civil contempt, motion for indirect criminal contempt, motion for direct civil contempt. Whatever it is that you should identify as a lawyer, the specific type of contempt you're seeking, because that will clue you in to say, wait a minute, if this is indirect criminal, this starting piece of paper better be under oath, okay? Or, wait a minute, I want him to go to jail, but if he pays the money, then I'm okay with that too. I guess I don't want criminal contempt. I want civil contempt. So you all, if you're filing these motions, you need to know what you want to do at the end, so it triggers what you need to do at the beginning. So let's go to scenario number 27. Must the judge allow closing arguments in an indirect contempt proceeding where the trial was conducted without a jury? Okay, so maybe the trial only lasted an hour and the lawyers asked for 5 minutes or 10 minutes for closing argument. Are they entitled to closing arguments? Yes, okay, because it's like a criminal case. You couldn't tell a lawyer in a criminal case you're not allowed to have closing argument or opening statements. So all of the same rights that you would have in a criminal trial apply to indirect criminal contempt. Okay, scenario number 28. And it says HRS because the case, when this was decided, was called HRS back then and not DCF. So, again, this is a real case. HRS was ordered by the court to move an incompetent defendant from jail to a state-licensed facility, and they failed to do so. The judge conducted a contempt hearing, and during the hearing, HRS representatives claimed that there was no bed space at another facility due to inadequate funding. So the question is an alleged inability to comply with an order a valid defense? And the answer is yes. Okay, the inability to comply is a valid defense unless the contemner voluntarily created the inability. Let's go back to the woman who spent the money at the casino. She can't comply with the court's order of child support anymore, but she created that problem. So, therefore, she could be held in indirect criminal contempt. Okay, let's go to scenario number 29. The judge ordered that the sheriff was to permanently assign three competent bailiffs to his courtroom. Now, in some jurisdictions, in like Miami-Dade County, I hire my own bailiff. He's been with me for 15 years. But in a lot of jurisdictions, there are sheriff's officers that are the bailiffs, and they just get randomly assigned or however they're assigned by the sheriff. They don't work for the judges directly. And the judge apparently was unhappy with the sheriff that he had been getting, so he entered an order saying, the sheriff shall permanently assign three competent bailiffs to his courtroom. So when a temporary incompetent bailiff was assigned, he held the chief court deputy in contempt. And the chief testified he had no intent to violate the order. He had to borrow a deputy at the last minute due to insufficient personnel. So is lack of intent to violate a court order a defense? And the answer is yes. Okay? And why is that? Because we want somebody go to jail for a criminal offense, there has to be criminal intent. So, again, however, the fact that somebody just says, I did not have the intent, is not binding on the court. But if it's proven that they did not have the intent, that is a valid defense to an indirect criminal contempt charge. Right, scenario number 30. After presiding over an indirect contempt trial, the judge made detailed oral findings on the record in support of the contempt, but did not prepare written findings of fact. Is the order deficient? The answer is, a written judgment of contempt must include a written statement of the facts. However, where sufficient oral findings are made on the record, then written findings of fact are not required for indirect criminal contempt. But however, there must be a court reporter present, since this is a criminal proceeding. And I don't know if any of you here judges announce their rulings, but you know, I think we as judges, when we're speaking, we are not as thorough and clear as we are when we are writing, and you can see it and make corrections. So even though you can get away with making an oral pronouncement, the chances of missing something are greater than if you sit there and write the order. All right, scenario 31. At a show cause hearing, the defendant denies the allegations, demands a trial, and demands that an attorney be appointed for him. Must the court appoint an attorney? And the answer is yes. This is indirect criminal contempt, therefore all of the procedural safeguards of every other criminal case apply, and the defendant is entitled to court-appointed counsel if they are indigent. And finally, we get to scenario 32 for juvenile court. After properly holding a juvenile in contempt of court for the second time, the judge was asked to consider alternative sanctions. The judge stated that anyone who committed contempt twice needed to be detained and sentenced the juvenile to 15 days in secure detention. Is this a legal sentence? And the answer is, unfortunately, no. The court must consider alternative sanctions to secure detention, and only upon finding that such would be inappropriate or unavailable may the court impose secure detention. So even though it's frustrating to deal with these kids, you have to follow the law and consider these alternates. So that's the presentation, and we have a few minutes for questions, so if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to try and answer them.
Hi, this is David Ehring. I'm with the Sixth Circuit. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've done a number of motions to compel in the last couple of years to the department to do certain things like submit a diligent search affidavits within 60 days, change custody, file TPR petitions, do adoption services, and so on. Every single time that we get to a point where the time has elapsed, but the department hasn't done anything, they simply come in and say, we don't have the resources to do anything. Right. And the judges have accepted that, and we haven't really had any way of getting around that. Can you give me any advice on how I would basically get around that canned response?
Well, I mean, you would have, if you wanted to hold them in contempt, you know, look, there's, you can, you know, one of the things I teach judges is there's a lot of ways to get people to comply with your orders without holding them in contempt. I mean, really, contempt is kind of a last resort to get people to do what you want them to do. You know, I mean, so as a judge, you try and, you know, figure out what is it, you know, what is it that you're doing to, you know, I mean, if they're supposed to be doing 30 days and you're continually doing it 45 days, you know, why is there that 15-day lag? If they're doing 30 days and you're not doing it for 90 days, okay, why is there that lag? But if you want to use, so, but if you want to hold them in contempt, you would have to prove that they had the resources to comply with the order in a timely fashion and willfully refused to do so. I mean, one of the things that I would do if I were a judge is to think about it. It's almost impossible. Like, how are you as a lawyer going to present evidence to the judge, like, unless you take, you know, a two-month trial to show the budget of DCF and where they spent their resources and what their personnel are doing? It's impossible for you to prove to that. So if the judge really wants to get control, you know, it's better to deal with people than with entities. So if you have, you know, a representative from DCF who's there on day one, he said, look, I am ordering you, okay, to get this done in the next 30 days, okay? Then all you have to do is, what did this person do in their life in 30? You don't have to worry about what resources DCF has or what, you know, because, you know, I said to the person, look, when you have 1,000 things to do, and one of them is something a judge ordered you to do under pain of contempt, and the other 999 are just things that need to be done, you do the thing the judge ordered you to do first, and then you worry about the other things. You know, but you have to have somebody there that's personally accountable so the judge can say that to them.
Yeah, that is one of the big problems we've had, and there are certain times I'm having an issue right now with, I'm in front of Judge Gross, and we've had the same case manager come 3 or 4 times. Every 2 weeks, the Judge Gross says, all right, you know, this is my drop-dead date. You have to have this done. They come to court 2 weeks later and said, you know, sorry, the case manager changed, or they were promoted, they quit, we don't have the resources, we didn't have the time, whatever. And then the judge gives them another 2 weeks, and it's just one of those things that keeps dragging on. And I'm just trying to figure out how I can help the judge kind of get control of this situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the problem. You know, if somebody quit, how do you hold their supervisor against them, saying, you know, well, you know, you should have known they were going to quit. I mean, it's you know, I know it's very frustrating, and one of the reasons why I have not gone to juvenile court as a judge is because I understand how frustrating it is for a lot of everybody that works there to deal with people who claim that they're underpaid and overworked, and even if they are, they're still not doing what needs to be done for these kids, and it's very frustrating. But I mean, the short answer to your question is, it's probably almost impossible to use the court's contempt power unless you have somebody there, and that same person is there the next time.
Okay, so just focus on the individual and try to remove the department from the process.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much, and I thank you for the opportunity to present this to you.